Welcome, everybody. This is the Winfrey, Terry Brown, and tonight's Carla Ruckert Monday night conference call. Normally it's Win and Terry, and once a month we are honored to have our special guest, Carla Ruckert. And do we have the conference line on? Do you guys hear me?
I hear you fine. Hello, everybody.
Was that the conference line? You could hear me, right?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, not you.
Okay.
not you, Carla, a regular conference line. I'm doing it differently today. Hello? Hi, so are you there?
BBSRadio.com. It's not mainstream. It could be here. Information and knowledge. Bringing humanity closer to truth. BBSRadio.com.
Music. Carla, are you there?
There's an echo.
I am.
Terry, are you there?
Echo.
I'm here.
Eyes, are you there?
Yes, sir.
All right, we are live on the air. Sorry, we had a little false start there. This is our Monday night conference line, and everyone on the conference line, anyone have anything they want to say? Carla and Terry are on the line before we mute you.
Hello, everybody. It's just so good to be with you. It's your energy.
Hello, everybody, from me also.
Very warm welcome to you, Carla and Terry. And Win, I want you to know we also have a special guest, Carlo, with us. You met on the show.
Carlo.
Hi, Win.
Hi, Carlo.
Long time.
Okay, what show did I meet you at?
I initially met you at the show in Palomar at the big windmill in Carlsbad, California.
Oh, that was a long time ago. In fact,
yeah, it was a while back.
They just had another one in Carlsbad, and I said, "Geez, I wish I was there." You know, we're in Arizona now, so it's harder to go that far. But thank you so much for coming. And have you paid any attention to our work, the stuff we're doing?
You know, I've been very disconnected for a while. I've been kind of doing the hermit thing both here and in the island of Hawaii since the last time I saw you, so I've not really kept in touch.
Okay. So every Monday night we do this conference call, and they're all different. Normally, our normal Monday nights, if there's such a thing, because it's never quite normal, but oftentimes we actually do a live channeling session. And we ask questions, and Terry answers the questions, and we pick a topic. And once a month, Carla Ruckert is our guest. And for those of you who are not aware of Carla, who are tuning in and listening, Carla was one of the people who I would give great credit for inspiring me at the very beginning of the time I started writing the book about David Wilcock. And she is a channel. If we use the word channel, she's a person that brings through messages from other realms. but she's quite extraordinary, quite different than most other people that do that. And she's most well known for something called The Raw Material, which she did in 1981. And this was the first time this raw group had picked someone to speak through in a very long time. And they were willing to talk through Carla because they believed in her high intent and her group's high intent to keep this. It was a very high source. In short, they identified themselves as a group soul that was made up of people that graduated, the beings, entities that graduated the physical universe, the third dimension, and then acted as a helper and a guide for those planetary populations still stuck in 3D, like us. And throughout history, they've done different interventions that have been very, usually ended up in some big transformation at this level. And Carla is their current, was their current emissary, still is, without going into long explanations. And if any of that sounds intriguing to any of you, Carla has a website, llresearch.org, llresearch.org. She has a community. She's got ongoing support, not so different from the way we provide ongoing support, different because she does it in her way. But many, many people around the world have been greatly inspired, greatly enlightened, greatly influenced by the materials she's brought through. And many of her books are available on her website for free. So llresearch.org. If you've never checked it out, there's probably thousands of transmissions that are transcribed up there.
Close
to 2,000. Mm-hmm. And plus a bunch of books. The Channeling Handbook, the Raw Material books, what else? Secrets of the UFO, is that up there?
It's up there. You can order the coloring book we did for children. That's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice round of things. Like, for instance, I think we may be one of the few metaphysical groups that I know who has anything for children. But in this case, somebody brought a child, and the child asked a question in a channeling session. And mm-hmm. Hatton's answer to that child was perfect for making a coloring book. And we had a lady that drew cartoons for government textbooks that was a member of the meditation group, and she was glad to help us out.
Sorry to interrupt, Ben, but do you have your own...
What is love?
Oh, wait. I just said put the recorder on, right?
Yes, please. Yes.
Please enter your PIN followed by pound.
Hang on a second. Hang on.
Please wait. This conference is being recorded.
Okay. We're recording this, and that means... We do that because we mail these all out, and we have maybe 1,000 people that are getting these recordings. So, and of course, I still have Alzheimer's, so my producer has to always tell me when to turn the tape recorder on. But you know what? Having Alzheimer's, it's called, some people call it ascension Alzheimer's, right? It's like as you get more into spirit, it's pretty easy to forget things down here.
Yeah.
And
good to hear.
you know, what you never notice when people are getting really old and they know their time is getting short, they start worrying much less about the physical universe, and they just seem spaced out, non-threatening, they're not competitive, and they're easy to be around. But of course, they can't remember things because part of their energy is already in other realms. And to do this job, the job we do, part of our energy has to be in other realms. And it's an interesting phenomena because as you start moving into other realms, all the things that you wanted to accomplish doesn't mean you don't have to. I want to accomplish things. I'm still in an accomplishment stage. But it's like there's not that angst about it. You just do it because, well, you know what? This will help people. We should do this. This is going to be a service. And you're not doing it because you need to be at the top of some recognition heap. Like, everybody's looking at me. Look at this. Wow. It doesn't matter anymore. You just do it. And sometimes when you're at the place of looking at things you want to accomplish, and accomplishment in 3D looks like recognition. An accomplishment in 4D and 5D looks like service. And that's a really big thing to integrate, that little fact right there. Because when you can do accomplishment out of service, you know you have come to a new plateau. Carla, anything you want to say? Of course, I always have to talk at the beginning because as soon as I give it over to Carla, I can just kind of relax for about a half hour. And then I have to tell her, be quiet, let Jerry say something. But Carla doesn't do that because she's attached to attention. If she was attached to attention, she'd be getting mad at me for saying that. And she's not attached to attention. She starts talking, and she gets into a flow. And, you know, one thing leads to the next, and heck, I can feel the energy. And I always learn things from her. So it's always great to have her go rambling on. But the topic tonight that I announced, Carla, I'm just making sure I get this out before I let you talk. So we can try to be on topic. The topic was the simple things. Because, you know, when I've seen this a lot. When people start getting into all this esoteric knowledge, all this grand understanding of how the universe works, and I used to be this way some years ago, you started to think you were in a special elite group. And the whole thing is about not being elite, but nonetheless, it's human nature to say, God, nobody around me knows this. And then you look at the people around you and you can't talk to them about all this sophisticated stuff. You start to think you're better than them. And yet, it's those very people around you that are giving you your opportunity to be of service. It's an interesting thing. We did a reading for someone recently. And I hope they don't listen. I'm not going to say their name, and I'm not going to say anything that will give them away. But there was a really great principle that came across in that reading. Because this person had a partner, and she felt that the partner didn't understand any of this esoteric stuff. So she felt separated from them. And they were wondering, should I stay with this person or leave them? And the counsel to that, and I thought this was profound, is I'm going to mute those tones just a moment.
Entry and exit chimes are off.
The counsel was that they were supposed to learn how to love this person as they were and make them feel safe and make them feel secure, like they weren't going to leave them at any moment. And that through doing that, the nature of the relationship would shift. Whereas her mate felt really, like, insecure because his wife was into all this esoteric stuff and that he didn't understand it. And was really, it was very profound answer. And it's one which I can certainly relate to at different times in my life. And when I took that very pose where I felt superior to other people because of things I knew, advanced wisdom, advanced esoteric knowledge, they didn't know that. And it was not about them having to know that for me to feel connected to them. And, you know, it's like I find just because somebody knows all of that stuff, it doesn't mean I feel more connected to them. Even right now, that is not what makes me feel connected to somebody, because we both have the same viewpoints of the universe. Although it can help in say working out a personal, you know, you can have some interesting discussions about it. But that's not the same as compassion. Now, on that note, I feel safe on turning it over to Carla and letting her take the stage. Go ahead, Carla.
All right, Wynn. Thanks.
Wynn, you want to mute the lines?
Yeah. Hang on a second.
All callers are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
All right.
I think that Wynn has such a good point in that it is the little things that count. It's the big things that make the news. But in a relationship, in real life, in life, the size that we all live it, it's the person that turns back to give a thank you note or a smile, that remembers to pray for you when you're sick instead of just giving a passing thought to it. There are so many ways that indicate how you feel with reference to the world. Obviously, the law of one material and the Confederation material in general are going to tell you that you're here to serve. You're here to serve the Creator, to serve the Creator in everyone that you see and in every situation that you meet. And people can interpret that in two ways, and that's why there are two polarities. People can interpret that by meaning that we're here to serve people by influencing them with all of our wonderful wisdom and power. And that's called the service to self polarity. So we whip everybody into line, punish them if they don't agree with us, and reward them if they do. And we have a universe that is as controlled as possible, and we're doing the very best we can to make a beautiful world in which everybody will be happy according to the way I think that they should be happy. The other way, of course, is to view the world as a very powerful and sacred thing, and yourself as a servant. And that is the service to others approach. And you can take that exact desire to serve the Creator and serve the Creator and everyone into such a vast array of attitudes that it helps to be able to break it down into, okay, is this for me or is it for the other guy? It helps to be able...
Carla,
yes.
Do you mind if I insert? I want to insert a point, okay?
A point. Okay.
Yeah. Don't lose your track. But, you know, when I look at the idea, are you service to self or service to others?
Mm-hmm.
And using that terminology can easily kind of turn something into a doctrine. I mean, I watch people walking around, it's like, you're the devil, you're service to others. And there's another way of looking at that distinction, which I wanted to share, which maybe would help some people see it in a slightly different way. And I'll say it, and you can, you know, contest what I'm saying.
Go right? for it.
'Cause, but, you know, everybody needs attention. Everybody needs attention. It's like when you're in this realm, attention is one of the most wonderful things that you get. And it's the manner in which you get attention that has a great deal of bearing on service to self and service to others. Because service to self would mean, look at me. Always look at me. And so when somebody's looking at you, I mean, when you're espousing great wisdom or, you know, great pontifications, you're getting energy. I mean, anyone is standing in front of an audience, whether they're negative or positive, if they're working it correctly, is getting energy from that group. Anyone has a following is getting energy from their group. And it's like, the thing about it is, when there's no co-creative energy, the energy doesn't sustain just because somebody's paying attention to you. It sustains so long, and then you have to go look for someone else, and look for someone else, and look for someone else. And then it starts to become really negative because you have to, like, manipulate people, enslave them, to try to squeeze more energy out of them. And you keep doing this, getting energy, 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 and but it's a never-ending kind of funnel of needing energy in its worst case. And that's where you get all these terrible sacrifices and rituals all done to get energy. Now, as you move just through the other side of that, because we all need energy, it's like it becomes co-creative. No, you're not just taking the position of, let me get energy from you. Give me energy. I am smarter than you. I am your teacher. You move into the space where the energy goes back and forth, and no one knows what's going to happen next, in which case the energy doesn't die. You don't have to keep looking for new people. You always find ways to keep the co-creation going. Now you can have, how would you say it, committed relationships. You notice on these calls, this is seat of the pants. It's co-creative, whatever we're doing, whether it's me and Terry, me and Carla, it's like we're bouncing energy back and forth between us. And we could probably go for 5 hours and not run out. And that's because the service to self aspect has the advantage of not running out of energy, where the service to others, I'm sorry, the service to others has the advantage of not running out of energy, and the service to self runs out of energy and always is acquisitive, always trying to acquire more energy, and always trying to be the top dog and getting everything focused on them. It's like, did you ever go to a group and have somebody that totally dominated the conversation and it got boring so fast and you had to sit through it because they would not let go and they didn't even know they were dominating. They thought they were God's gift sharing things to people. Mm-hmm. So that's one way that I have come to of looking at service to self, service to others, because it's not just a matter of, okay, I'm one of the good guys, I'm service to others, and he's one of the bad guys with horns, he's service to self. The reason the person is service to self is because they never had that experience of co-creativity with someone. I won't say that's absolutely true. Well, maybe they have, and they said, I'd rather do it this way. But the Ra group says you can go to the very high level, the service to self. But at a certain point, if you don't switch, you're stuck. You can't go any higher because you're at the top. You're at the top of the pyramid. Top of the pinnacle. going to happen. You're creating patterns that you let other people fall into, and you're stuck because it gets boring because you're creating all the outcomes. And until you move into the place where you don't know what's going to happen next, and I don't know if that's exactly the right way to say it, until you move into the place where there's co-creation and you give people the space to be themselves and they're not afraid of you and they can be themselves and you can be yourself, the energy moves to a new level. And that's where the law of one exists. Now, oh, back to you, Carla. Did that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Okay.
What do you think, Terry? I thought you had something going there.
Terry, wake up. Are you there?
I'm here. I was on mute.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that that's... I totally agree with what you said.
Yeah, I do too. But the heart of it, you know, is that you release within yourself the attachment to how people see you or to how you even, you know, if you see yourself as a person who is of service to others, then it doesn't harm you to say, I am a servant. You know, I start out each day praying to be a servant in my Father's house and really truly mean that. You know, may I please address every circumstance in its highest and best way. May I not be caught by circumstances so that I lose my perspective and my compassion and my judgment. And it really helps to have that determination. Because when you are service to others, when you are wanting to love rather than be loved, as St. Francis put it, to be supported rather, to be a support to others rather than to support, to console rather than be consoled, all of those beautiful things that you hope to do for other people, it's one of those things where it takes a good deal of substantial, what my mother used to call bottom. It takes a lot of bottom, a lot of soundness, groundedness, to stay humble and to stay genuinely in that place where you know for sure that things are coming through you, not from you, and that you are well cast in your role as servant because your job is to get your mind and your heart empty so that you can receive what the Creator is giving you, so that you can create the most beautiful possible day or essay or food, you know, something that you're cooking or, you know, the most beautifully clean bathroom or whatever it is that you're doing. You know, if you're empty like that, then you are free to be taken by the highest and best of energies and to create the most healthful and the best feeling vibration to live in. Golly Moses, think if all the people that you knew were really interested in creating that kind of atmosphere. Just even on a tiny scale, it startles the mind as to how beautiful an experience it makes for everybody. So that's the basic thing, I guess, about the little thing counting, is that what do you have but the little things, really? And if you don't make those little things count, what does count? You know, I think it's really important to honor your days, to pick out things that make days special, and to find a way to celebrate.
Excuse me a second. Terry, are you rattling papers?
Sorry.
Thank you.
But it was such a beautiful letter. Anyway, I was in a dropping place.
You know, the thought that occurred to me is when you say things, I hear contrary things in my mind, so I'm just going to say my contrary things. the idea of humility, I think, can be interpreted or misinterpreted by some people. In fact, I misinterpreted it for a period of time. because I remember when I was younger, I used to look at Muhammad Ali, and I said, what an ego trip that guy is on. I'm the greatest. You know, no one could accuse Muhammad Ali of being humble. And, you know, he would constantly seem to be pounding his own chest. Mm-hmm. But on the highest level, I don't think he said those things out of a sense of ego. I think he was on a divine mission. Pardon me?
He was a performer.
He was a performer, right. And he was on a mission, either consciously or unconsciously, to be a hero for black people, which, you know, he succeeded beyond anyone's wildest dreams. And he used that ability of his bravado in order to get the right attention so that he could do that. And underneath it, he was a humble person. So when you use the word humble and you try to apply that against people, it's very much a trick to figure out, are they really doing that out of ego or are they doing that out of service, okay? And that's why Jesus said, judge not, lest ye shall be judged. You don't have to worry. You don't have to worry about it. You just have to worry about yourself and figure what you're supposed to do and evaluate yourself, because otherwise, just even making this distinction of service to self and service to others puts you on a can easily tempt you to move into a judgmental thing, like this person's this, this person's that, this person's this, they're a reptilian, you know, God knows what. So, but on this, you know, on the simple things, I know myself, I've learned this, that there are days when I feel funky. There's days when I look like a criminal. There's days, and I've learned to understand it. It's kind of like I'm washing up all these old lifetimes. And various days they show up, and I look in the mirror and I said, uh-oh, that's one of those patterns coming up. Mm-hmm. And I have to shift myself. I have to shift myself. And one of the things I've learned is a way to shift myself is through the most simplest acts of kindness, like calling up somebody that I haven't talked to in a long time and saying, hey, I just thought I'd check in. How are you doing? And we start a conversation. And 5 minutes into the conversation, all those patterns that were up in me go away. And yet, it's so easy to forget how to do those things. And if you don't do them, if you don't shift yourself, I can look like a criminal for the entire day. In fact, if they better not go out today, they might arrest me. He looks at me. So, I mean, in a sense, you're doing those things for other people, but you're also doing them for yourself, because the energy always comes back, and it shifts you, and you have to learn to ride the energy of transformation. And that keeps you in a state of flow. It keeps you in a state of movement. Because, I mean, for me, anyway, this is for me. Other people are different. But for me, if I don't keep that kind of motion up, then I just, you know, withdraw and I go into old patterns. So I need to do that. I have too much energy, and the energy backs up on me if I don't find a way to release it. And, Carla, I'll bet you never look like a criminal, do you?
Very few women as small as I look criminalistic.
Oh,
I'm so innocent.
Right.
Let it just be said that the summer I turned 19, I was led into the state fair for under 10 with my brother.
Oh, really?
I am so innocent and so devious. No, I'm pretty much of a straight arrow. But I suppose that humility can be taken in that way of false humility. But, you know, true humility is that emptying out that makes you ready to receive. And I really don't know any other way to be the servant of the Most High other than to empty the self and prepare for whatever you're going to feel. I mean, admittedly, this is all on the inner, and if you're telling somebody that you're writing down to the office with that you're doing all this dramatic cleansing and emptying of self so that you can do the Creator's work, you know, in your cubicle, they're going to look at you and think, well, my, you're taking yourself seriously, aren't you? And all I can say is, well, yes, I am. This is what I'm here for.
I mean, I know somebody out there is listening to this, and they're saying, all right, Carla, all right, I agree, but how do I empty myself? I wake up, I'm guilty, I feel shame. I mean, I hate everybody today. You know, I'm reading the newspaper and I feel like hell. You telling me I'm supposed to empty myself? So you got to tell somebody, what do you do to empty yourself? Okay? I mean, I told you, one of the things I do is I jump into the middle of the fray and I'll call somebody or I'll do something, even when I feel unworthy. I do something. Once I jump and I become with that person, I start moving into a center point, a neutrality, and I'm listening to them, and I'm caring, and that moves me, and I'm kind of like empty. It's like, I mean, I'm talking on this show, and it's like I know it sounds like...
things are moving through you.
But I'm empty. I mean, I'm not sitting here, I'm not really talking. I'm just sitting here in neutral and listening carefully, and suddenly the words pop up. But how do you? Well, maybe you're empty all the time. Okay.
No, I'm not. As a matter of fact, I have as much grit in the system as anybody else, and I'm totally a bozo. But I think when you discover those times where you've gotten jammed up on your own grit, and you have to let go. I think it's a choice point. It's an opportunity for you to make the choice between doing something that would be easy but will not solve anything and doing something that will be a solution. And that is sometimes to offer an apology, to make things right in some way. A lot of things in life, there are two rights and two, you know, no wrong. And it doesn't hurt you at all to support the other person and not be right. I think not being right is one of the hardest things for a person to do if he wants to stay empty. If he wants to stay empty, he's got to let go of being right.
You know, I have found with, like, apologies, there's times when somebody really has done something to me. I've really done something that's hurt somebody, but they really hurt themselves. I didn't really do it. They just triggered themselves. And I was fairly innocent, but yet they're really hurt. And I don't really want... There's a part of me that doesn't want to apologize because I'm right. They didn't have to go through that. But what I've learned is you don't have to apologize for your action. But you can apologize to the person. I'm sorry what I did hurt you. And you can be totally honest that way, and you don't have to act like you did something wrong, because oftentimes people use that kind of energy to try to make you feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to. If you're apologizing out of guilt, it's not very good, okay?
No,
you're not going to get anywhere with it. But you can always apologize for hurting someone or doing something inadvertently. It doesn't matter. If somebody had a negative reaction, you can apologize. And usually that will switch the energy around.
Right.
No,
I don't think that in order to be humble, you need to be a doormat.
Right.
I just feel I think
a lot of people think that, you know,
yeah.
And I mean, I think when you say service to self, and when you say humble, or when you say service to others, and you say humble, people start thinking like, okay, I'm going to spend the day, and I'm going to walk little ladies across the street, and mm-hmm. I'm going to give some money to this charity, and, you know, being service to others can have a warrior aspect to it. It doesn't mean being a doormat or small. It can have a roar to it. It can have passion to it. It does, you know. It depends on your own personal attributes. So what is your way of expression? And because if you have a natural way of expressing, and then you don't do it because you think it's too much, then that works against the whole thing. Jerry, are you going to say anything?
Let's see if I can put it into words. A lot of times people try to, they like the feeling of love and they want to be totally loving, and they don't understand why they can't just be totally loving, that all of these things come up and jump up and are like blockages in their way of being totally loving. And I think that part of that is that within their own self, at some point they felt like they were right and nobody would listen, nobody would give them any credit, and they had to just shut up. And so I think communication is a big thing, that if people can start to, like, go through their life and write down where there was a big change in their life, like where they weren't allowed to say something or do something that they felt was very, very important, perhaps in their childhood, and they kind of hold that to themselves, like that it creates a blockage towards reaching out. And like they then think everybody's going to be that way towards them, like the parents were. And so if they try to be totally loving and they still have these belief systems that were instilled in them when they were a child, then it's going to create conflict. So I think communication or genuineness and sitting down and writing down where the major changes in one's life were and what was going on at that time, and writing down your own point of view and how you were right at that time. And then mm-hmm. eventually you can let go of having to be right because you've expressed it. And it dissolves a little bit of the angst that came about when one wasn't able to do what they felt was right. Those are my comments.
Thank you.
There's a technique that you can use, and my husband is very good at it. He used to teach it. Where you create a drama of one of those situations Terry was talking about. And one of the roles is played by, you know, the person, the self. The other role is the person that they had the trouble with, that they had the miscommunication with. And this neuro-linguistic programming. So you get out in front of the group. It's all done in a very intense group therapy atmosphere. But you don't play yourself. necessarily. You might play, you know, the boss or the mom or whatever. But whoever plays what roles, you reenact that role. And this time you do the things you did not know how to do when you were a child. And you successfully, if the therapy is successful, you defend yourself. And that is supposed to be a tremendously healing thing.
I think one of the greatest services that a person can do for another person, and you have to be a little wise, you have to be able to look at this from afar in order to know what you're doing. Otherwise, you probably won't do it. And that is that, you know, we always like being around cheery, uplifted, joyful people. We all do. It takes less energy. But there are times when somebody's going through a dark night of the soul. Now, this is where you have to identify, is this a dark night of the soul, or are they just an energy sucker? Because when you hook into somebody that's going through really heavy negative stuff, oftentimes they'll latch on to you, and they'll just keep draining your energy, and it doesn't go anywhere. They don't change, and they use you as a just constant distraction because they're in so much pain. But there's a point when someone is actually attempting to take responsibility for their stuff, and their stuff starts coming up, and it doesn't look pretty. And most people will back off from that because it's so hard. And if you find somebody like that in your life, and you can hold for them when they're going through it, and you can help them reach the other side of it, you have done a huge service for the universe, because now you've been responsible for holding so someone could have the courage to go through all that garbage that's coming up and get to the other side of it. And once they're on the other side, there's like huge amounts of gratitude that gets exchanged, because on some level, they know you did that for them. And then they learn how to do that for other people because it was done for them. And it's one way to make a huge shift and change in your life and other people's lives. And I know that there's been times when I've done that for people, and I see how it works. And I know that there's people that have done that for me, and I see how it works. But it's not an easy thing when you're going through stuff like that, to have someone that can hold for you. Unless you're lucky enough to be married to a very compassionate person, then they'll understand. But, you know, when you're not, and the thing is you don't look good. And when you don't look good, people turn away from you. And it's very special when someone cannot turn away from you. When you don't look good and hold for you, until you heal. You know the experience I'm talking about, Carla?
Oh, yeah, sure. And you speak about it very well, Wynn.
Well, thank you. I've been there and done that.
Yeah. I think we all have.
I mean,
and I
to tell
think
you
we,
the truth,
we can be that place for other people,
yeah.
that lab that people can crawl into, that smile that people can snuggle into. And I get letters from all over the world all the time, and people I've never met. I got a beautiful, it looks like the kind of thing you hang in your car over the rearview mirror, and it's got a little dangly thing. Anyway, she made it herself. She was a Buddhist nun in the far reaches of India, and she wanted to thank us for having the materials online where she could read them for free. I mean,
right.
It's just like that all the time. There's a bottomless well of gratitude. Bread
yeah.
out on the waters is amazing. It doesn't come in tenfold. It comes in 100-fold or 1,000-fold.
Right.
And I'm not saying this financially. I'm saying this in terms of the deep bottom of your heart you can't believe how warm it can grow because of the thank yous that people will give you, and really all you were doing was trying to serve, and you know, that's a crapshoot. You never know whether you're able to serve or not. You're just hoping that you can.
Yeah. Sometimes when you do that, sometimes when you do it, gratitude comes back, and sometimes you fail.
Well, you don't fail. You just, I call it, you get a blessing. You know, the blessings in the Bible, blessed are those who are poor because they are the children of God. Those are the benedictions. You get a benediction sometimes. You get to be those that are cursed for the Spirit's sake. And so
right.
I look at somebody that does me that way. I say, oh, thank you. Used to drive people crazy. I don't have anybody in my life like that right now, but I used to, and I'd thank him. He'd tell me how rotten I was, and I'd thank him. And I'd really mean it. He'd say, why are you thanking me? I said, well, blessed are those who are persecuted.
I just got an email last week from somebody that I've known for years that has decided I was evil. You know, this was somebody that was going through a really, really hard time. She's probably going to listen to this, so I'm not going to say her name, but, you know, she was going through a very hard time for years. And somehow I gave her my phone number, and she would call me every other day. And oftentimes she would complain about everybody and everyone that she was coming in contact with. And I kept telling her, you're not supposed to judge people. Go through experiences and just dismiss them. But everyone was, like, cursing her. So I knew eventually it would be my turn, and I did. I did. I got to have my turn, and it was okay. And it, you know, just how it works. You know, I thought it's officially we should end the show now. But since we could go a little longer, if you guys are at the time, both you and Terry, Carla and Terry, we could open up the lines and see if people have anything they want to share along the topics we've been talking about or anything they want to ask anybody. Would you guys like that? Is that okay?
Yeah, I can do that for a certain amount of time. I got to leave by about 9:30 for sure.
Maybe another 10 minutes or something.
No, like a half hour would be okay.
A half hour? Oh, my God. Okay.
My precious time, huh?
All right. So let me, if you're listening on the radio, you can phone in on the BBS lines, which are on their homepage, bbsradio.com, which I don't know what their phone numbers are. And of course, we have a conference call going on, and I can unmute the conference call. Let's see here.
All callers are muted. All callers are unmuted.
Okay, everyone is unmuted. And anyone like to share, add, question anything on the topics we're talking about tonight and even on other topics?
You're all shy.
They're all shy. All right. Hi, come up with a good question.
What I keep telling my children is to treat others the way you want to be treated.
Okay. And who said that? Was that Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. Can you say that, Carla?
Well, the Bible says that, and most world religions have that precise sentiment, the golden rule.
Mm-hmm.
It's the basis of so much.
Anyone else have something they want to share?
I guess I would just put forward the idea that if we're just simple and we just try and be the best that we can in all ways and not kind of get real mental, either to puff ourselves up or put ourselves down, and sort of take the consequences. You know, sometimes things seem to be flowing, and sometimes it may not go over so well. But it's just, to me, it's just better to stay simple and not get too mental on it. Keep doing the best you can, and, you know, like you said, not be so judgmental. But if you find yourself there, just kind of cool it down, and that if we can just, it's kind of like overdoing it on the understanding and on the intellectualizing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but I still feel motivated to be that kind of person. So I guess that's what I have to say, if that makes any sense here. Thanks.
It does indeed.
Who is that sharing?
This is Nimue.
Nimue. Hi, Nimue. Nice to have you on the line.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I think, if anyone's interested, I think here's a technique. And I don't know if technique is the right word, but here's a something you can do. And that is, when you wake up in the morning, say, okay, God, give me opportunities today. I will not miss any opportunity to make a difference in my life, in uplifting someone. And if I don't get any opportunities thrown at me, I'll make some up. And think of things that you wouldn't have normally done, and that you go out of your way to do, that will change the vibrations, the joy, the happiness of someone else. And do that every day for a week. And I'd be willing to bet you feel different at the end of the week. But do it deliberately. Don't be passive. Say, I will not miss an opportunity. You know, I built that into my system. And it's like when I go out into the world, I mean, always things come to me where I have something to contribute. I don't have to look for it. In fact, some days I'm scared to go out of the house because I have all this stuff to do. And one of those things will pop out at me. I'll share with you. I like to go to coffee shops and sit in coffee shops. But I have this tiny little RV, and it's like right now I went and I parked it in a parking lot. And I love being in this RV, and the world is around me, and I'm contained in this little beautiful energy bubble. And I don't know why I brought that up, but it's my unique way of getting away from everything. It's like sometimes if you're in a house, the energies, especially if you're with other people, and this isn't true too much with Jerry, occasionally, you know, I like being in my own space. And it's like, this has been, like, for me, something that I've had a lot of my life. It was very weird. You know, one of the things that was in my background was being a singer-songwriter. But truthfully, the singer-songwriter part of me goes back to being a troubadour. And troubadours can't have a home. They have to travel around, and they go into a city, and they suddenly create a circumstance where they have a home, and then they move to the next city. And it's all limited. And I used to do that this lifetime. And I was so bad at having a home that even when I had a home and I had to make phone calls, now this is crazy. I used to watch this when I was younger, and I couldn't figure it out, but I accepted it. I would have to make phone calls. But instead of calling somebody from my home, I would go to a telephone booth. And for some reason, I felt, and I understand it now, I could connect to somebody from a telephone booth better than from my home. And the reason was, even though I had what was like a home, I didn't know how to make it a home. Because I had this troubadour part of me that identified with having a home as being uncreative, being trapped. And when I was on the road, all these amazing things would happen. So So I used to go to telephone booths to make phone calls. And now, I've never heard anyone say that before in their life. That was my own unique, I won't say phobia. Unique. Carla, what's the word?
I would just say odd experience.
Odd experience, right. Right. So, but yet, I knew it was true, and I allowed myself to do it. I didn't try to, how would I say, think I needed a shrink because I needed to make phone calls from phone booths. In any case, thank you, Nimue, for sharing. And anyone else want to say anything? Now, you know what? I'm gonna make a challenge to all of you who are listening who are not talking. Instead of thinking, God, I don't have anything important to say, or I'm not worthy to speak, or anything like that, I want somebody to say, I have something to say, and just start rambling, and let themselves talk without knowing what they're going to say next. Who has the courage to do that?
Well, I sort of like what Nimue said, like, can I be simple, can I be kind of not too sophisticated?
Steve, are you on your headset right now?
Headset?
Well, I can get off of it. Yeah. I purchased the headset on Amazon.
Okay.
It hasn't arrived yet.
Steve has a bad headset, so he's always muffled. I always know when he's on his headset.
I just ordered a new one. So.
Yeah. Oh, great. Anyone else?
But it hasn't come yet.
Anything else you'd like to say, Steve?
No. Oh, I don't know. I heard somebody in the background said that they wanted to say something.
Yeah, I was hoping we could get you to laugh because
I thought Nimue White said was very poetic and very endearing.
Yes, it was. Thank you. Thank you, Nimue, for coming forth.
Thank you.
I thought it was very endearing. I thought it was very. I really liked it. It's very nice. You must be a very sweet, nice person.
Nimue, what city are you in, Nimue?
Phoenix.
You're in Phoenix, okay. Mm-hmm. If you were in Steve, were in the same city, I would send you over to Steve, the Starbucks that Steve hangs out in Los Angeles.
Okay.
See, you would run into a Steve who said something inappropriate to you. That's what you would run into. You might run into a guy who said something very inappropriate to you.
Is that Chris?
But on the other hand, you might find a guy who's really very charming and very nice. You could find a lot of things.
We all have all those sides to us, don't we?
Yes.
Right. Anyone else want to say anything?
I do, Wynn. I do. This is Tracy in West Virginia, honey. You know, everything that you've said today, everything Carla said, has really led home to me something that I found that I have found the most promising way to actually relate to people or change people and change the world is simply, just to be kind to them and to listen to them and to not judge them. And I, like you, go out of my way every day to take people that I see that nobody is doing this with and just spend a little bit of time with them, and I ask for those experiences, and they do come to me, just like they do you. And seriously, it's small. It's a little teeny tiny thing, but it makes such a huge difference in people's lives because, you can look at these people a few days later, and you can see that suddenly they don't feel as badly about themselves or, their experiences or whatever they're going through. And it doesn't take that much time, to give somebody a little attention, a little bit of recognition, a little bit of a you're all right, whatever you're feeling, it's okay. Don't judge yourself so hard. And it's just big. It's little, but it's big.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing and affirming what we're saying. Let's just suppose that you're God's representative down here, and all those people you run into, they're not meeting many people who are God's representative. They're meeting people who are part of God, but not consciously caring in the way that you're able to care. And the little slightest kindness and the little slightest wisdom that comes through you spontaneously can change that person for the rest of their life. I know that there were people that did this for me when I was younger. They would say something, and I didn't even know they said it, but they went out of their way to say it for one reason or another, and then I thought about it for months, and each of us has the ability to do that. And when you start doing that, when you really assume that responsibility of being Spirit's representative down here, you catch the attention of Spirit. That's, people want to know, how do I connect with the higher realms? Start doing that, and you can't help but connect with the higher realms. They start paying attention to you.
One of the things that I found is everybody, there's so many people that feel shame. You know, I am an ordained minister, and I counsel a lot of people, mostly sexually, honestly, and it's just amazing how many people have these horrible feelings about themselves, and you cannot change, you don't have to change that person to enhance that person. All you have to do is show that person that it's okay to be who they are, or to have had the experiences that they've experienced, or the thoughts that they think, and you know, and they're, and they are different, and the world's different.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, sex is one. You said sex, right?
Yes, sexually. I do a lot of sexual counseling.
I mean, sex is one of those things that people have been conditioned to feel bad about. And, you know, I've read this, and I think it's true, that in olden times, you know, thousands of years ago, it's the reason sex, one of the reasons sex has so many prohibitions onto it, is because sex is something that empowers somebody. And those beings in this realm that want to control others don't want people empowered. So if they tell them don't have sex, they have a bunch of people that aren't feeling empowered, and they're easy to control. So that's how I think all the prohibitions of sex have come about, through religion, through everything else. And, you know, it's one of those areas that I don't think you're supposed to be promiscuous. I think you have to be very discerning about who you partner with. But don't think that sex is bad. And in general, it's better to make a mistake and move on than not do anything. That's about anything in life, whether you're trying to make money, whether you're trying to find a love. It's far better to make mistakes, because if you don't do anything, you're stuck. And if you make mistakes, you're learning, and you're increasing your discernment, and you're increasing the possibilities of success. So, but a lot of people are afraid of making a mistake. What if I get the wrong person? Just don't get somebody that's got a disease, that's all. But other than that, you know, don't get somebody that's going to stalk you or want to hurt you if it doesn't work out. Get somebody that's strong enough so they, if it doesn't work out, then you be strong enough. So if it doesn't work out, you can go back to where you were. Because, you know, you always have the place where you were. And sex is a hot topic. One day we'll have a juicy Monday night with Carla talking about sex. Okay.
This is certainly a wide and broad topic.
Yeah, and it's one that
you can talk about sex all the way from sexual addiction to sex as sacred, sex and sexuality, and any of those levels are wonderful to talk about.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's something you have to experience without judging yourself. And
oh yeah,
you know, who was it? I think it was Shakespeare. What did he say? To thine own self be true. This is one of those areas where you can't make a one-size-fits-all rule. Everyone has to figure
you
out.
Can't. There is no one-size-fits-all sexuality. The
right,
thing of it is,
right.
there is a one-size-fits-all love.
Yes.
And you have to lean on the love and then be creative about the physical details.
Right. I'll bet Carla has some juicy things to share. We'll get a lot of listeners if I put that up.
You know. Yeah. Hey, 79-year-old Rucker's about to explode here. Yeah, that'll just really make the day.
Right. Anyone else have something they want to share?
Yes, that I believe that sex is the greatest God-given exercise.
Amen.
Hallelujah.
Not that we use it well, but but it has that potential.
Anyone else? Is there anyone on the line that feels really guilty and ashamed about sex that wants to admit it?
No.
No.
Feeling good about sex. Sorry.
Anyone on the line besides Heise that's having a great sex life that wants to admit it?
Now what?
All right. Anyone want to say anything before we sign this show off?
God bless everybody.
Well, thank you all who are listening. You know, I said earlier, I said that Carla and I can go on and on because it's co-creative and that we bounce off of each other. And, you know, it took me a while. I'll say it took me a while to get into the space where I could totally be myself around Carla, because she intimidated me, okay? It was like, oh my God, I've got the great Carla Rucker on the line, and I better not screw up. But that's part of growing together, trusting each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, when you're dealing in lower levels of stuff, oftentimes, if you express any kind of weakness, everyone jumps on you. And even I have done that with people here and there, where they're getting vulnerable and expressing a weakness. And I've done this with Terry, I confess. And I said, yeah, yes, you're always like that. And then it's not a good thing to do, because then you shut down the energy. And it's great on these calls where we can be totally ourselves, totally vulnerable, talk about our own processes, because our processes are your processes. You know, learning how we process the day is a way that you can learn how to process your day in your own way. And, of course, if you find your own successful ways of processing your day, we can all learn from you, because life is a creation. We are all in the middle of the creation, and we're all learning how to play bigger parts in the creation. And you guys inspire me. Carla inspires me. Terry inspires me. And that's why we can go on and on like this. And the energy doesn't die. I mean, we just are, you know, but it's not because we're all such interesting people, even though we probably are, but it's because we have the courage to co-create with each other, and that I can say anything, Carla can say anything, Terry can say anything, and it is the co-creative energy that goes on and on and on. It changes our worlds. And learning how to co-create with your own life, with the people around you, and realize that you're co-creating not only with the people around you, we're co-creating with the Creator. We're co-creating with God. Every one of us in this realm is playing that part. And you're not here to disempower yourself. You're not here to be there's that famous quote by Marianne Williams, which I read and I said, yeah, I understand that. It said that each of us can step to the plate and be the light we are, but we're afraid to. All of us. I've been. And learning that as you do that, that's how, one of the ways you get more joy, more fun, and learn to, see, I'm talking too long, and I'm saying, I'm blowing my climax in what I'm saying, and now I'm being honest, because I said I could see myself doing it, so if I take another step, I'm going to do it, so I'm just going to tell everybody I'm doing it, and you see, that is being in the moment, following the track, and saying it's okay. I can't even remember what I said now.
Well, I think you were trying to move into a moment where you could show how ineffable everything was, and the trouble with that is when you get close to showing that, you run out of words.
Yeah. Oh.
Because it really is ineffable. That is real.
Was the word ineffable that you're using?
Uh-huh, yes.
Except now I'm running out of vocabulary. If I don't understand ineffable, I will, you know. Carla has a really good vocabulary, and she used to be a librarian, right?
I still am. Was always a librarian.
And did you know Terry was a librarian?
Yeah. Isn't it the very best of all possible professions?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm around people that have better vocabularies than me. But I got
it
a good
really
sweet
is.
Spot.
It's a matter of how much you like to read.
So what does ineffable mean? Okay, because I'll bet you a bunch of people didn't know what that meant.
Well, ineffable means you can't really pin it down with words or describe it. Indescribable, I suppose, would work.
Uh-huh.
Mysterious.
It's hard to capture its essence, let's put it that way.
Yes.
And once you move into essence, it's very hard to talk about it.
But, you know, sometimes you move into essence and the words keep floating above essence. I don't know, or just below it, and it's like there's that moment of space where I always say, you know, I've said this before, that the interdimensional beings, the interdimensional energies, are in the spaces, and then when I start talking, and I just find myself having this incredible space in between my words rushing in. And I go to that moment where, hey, if I stop talking now, we're all going to go into a state of meditation. And everyone's going to be together in that meditation. And then dancing around that space is like a really interesting place. Of course, you know, I used to write songs and poems, and that's what I always tried to reach for at that. Terry,
well, Wynn, I didn't tell you. I've got something to tell you.
Go ahead.
I finished doing my poems, and I understand from Ian, the archive website webmaster, that they will be up soon.
They will be what?
Up on site. The poems
on your
of Carla Elizabeth Ruckert. Yeah.
All
now,
right.
I'm not saying my poems are particularly good, but I did finally edit them.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, that's one of my projects that
I know, it's one of those things you never, ever do. And I finally, after 6 decades of them, I finally sat down, and I really can't write at this point. I'm on pain medication, I'm not that sharp, and I want to make sure that I give everything when I'm actually writing. So I'm doing things that I actually can do well, you know, even with pain medication and not feeling well. And so I just finished the poems. And it feels so good to have something positive done. Not that I think my poems are so hot, But, you know, when you talk about metaphysical subjects, then there's always a possibility that you might be talking about something that somebody wants to think about. And
mm-hmm.
so even though your poem's not all that good, it might be a resource. So
mm-hmm.
I'm glad to be putting them online just in case one of them might help somebody.
Right. Well, you know, poems, I often find that I have on one of my mailings, occasionally I put one of my old poems up, and always I get an email back from someone who realizes that I really am human.
Mm-hmm.
And that I really did go through a lot of experience in life, and that I did have pain.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps connect them with the rest of my work, because all this channeling stuff can get so exalted in other people's minds that they don't realize it came from a human.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I had one person read through, and he said, I didn't realize that you had, I have a section called love poetry, and I put all the poetry I'd written specifically for a guy in that section.
Mm-hmm.
And he, of course, that's where he went first. He said, I didn't realize that you had such horrible experiences in love. And, you know, it's not that you have horrible experiences in love, it's that you write about the bad ones.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he couldn't imagine that I would have a difficult time. But sure, if you're going through real life, you're going through real disturbances and real disappointments and real catalysts. It's nothing.
You know, if you're a singer, if you're a singer-songwriter, I mean, when I was younger, I used to adjust my life to go through things so I could write more songs. And you know, it was like having a home. Having a stable relationship was like having a home. Once you had a stable relationship, there was nothing to write about. So you had to be moving in and out of relationships to get the inspiration. So that was, I mean, when you met me, Carla, I was like just over the, you know, it was when I first met Daphne. And, I was
in
that
space. Yeah, you were living in your van and selling sunglasses.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And writing poems.
Yeah, good poems.
Yes, thank you. And then I stopped wanting to put my poems out. And I think, see, one of the things about, for me, writing poems and songs is that when I was younger, I thought no one ever understood me. And I had this depth, and I never could express who I really was to anybody until I started writing songs and poems. And then everybody used to say, yeah, I'm going through that too. And so it made me, really encouraged me to be an artist, because suddenly, God, people are understanding me, or I'm waking up the part of me that's them. And Terry, you're not saying enough, you know.
yeah, I know.
Should I push you to say something, or should I just let you be quiet? You could have a choice, okay?
Well, I'm enjoying listening to people. So, I'll just be quiet some more.
Okay. All right. Okay, you see, we can go on and on and on. And I said I was going to do 10 minutes, and now we've done 30 minutes, and Carla doesn't want to leave.
Well, Carla's going to have to leave at the 30, which is
so it
now.
Is the 30 right now, Carla.
Yeah. So I'll give you all my love, Wynn. And thank you so much for having me on. And thank you, Terry. It's so much fun to be with you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank
I
you,
really
Carla.
Enjoy it. And I'll see you next time, guys.
Thank you, Carla. I love you.
Thank you, Carla.
And thank all of you, Mike. Thank all of you for helping to support the energy who are on our conference line. We'll see you Wednesday.
Thank you, Ben and Terry and BBS.
Thank you.
To stop conference recording, press 1. To return to your conference recording has stopped.